Should women be saving and planning for retirement differently than men?
This is Retirement Revealed, where Jeremy Kyle and his guests guide you towards making smarter retirement, investment, and tax planning decisions.
Welcome to Retirement Revealed. I'm your host, Jeremy Kyle, and we're here to turn your retirement savings into retirement income. Today, we're talking with Marcia Mantel about retirement planning for women. Marcia, welcome to the show.
Jeremy, thank you so much for inviting me and inviting me back. That's even a bigger thing, so thanks.
Absolutely. You've been on a few years back. I think you might be one of my first repeats. I'll have to go back in the archives and check this out to see, do you get the award for first repeat guest? This would be great.
Oh, that would be great. And I think I was on pretty early, so congratulations on years now of podcasting. That's very exciting.
Yeah, you're right on. We're over 4 years now. Of course, we got the YouTube channel. Mr. Retirement is the YouTube channel. Of course, perhaps if I'm Mr. Retirement, you can be the female version because you know more about retirement than most anyone. But you've also focused a lot on kind of the unique aspects that women have when it comes to retirement planning. And let's just let everyone in on a little secret. Today is International Women's Day as we're recording. I'm supposed to make podcast evergreen and not to, you know, let people know if it's winter or not. But today is International Women's Day as a recording. I thought no one better to talk about women in retirement than you, especially because I think you wrote a book called What's the Deal with Retirement Planning for Women.
So, for women.
Yeah, we'll talk about all that. But tell us first more about yourself, Marcia.
Oh, well, thank you, Jeremy. You know, the reason I know a lot about retirement, I would say, is because I've been in this field for many, many years, as in 30, which is shocking. In fact, it'll be 32 later this year. So, you know, you pick up a tip here or there. And what I have found through my journey is it's been surprising how women, I think what we all tend to know these days is women tend to live longer than men. And so they need more retirement income than men. And yet, our industry doesn't exactly talk to women, and not in a way that most women can absorb and comprehend and understand, but we sure are good at talking at them. So I've been spending my career really trying to change that dialogue so that women can be part of this game. You know, we can't be bystanders. And I often think about it like football or hockey, a sport that women typically don't play, although that's changing too. But we cheered every one of our kids, right? So we sat on the sidelines and we watched our kids play their sports. So we're there, we're engaged, we know that there's a game. We might even know the rules of the game, but we weren't the players. And especially boomer women, you know, being in sports was just not part of our growing up. It wasn't not an option. So it's great to see a lot of good progress. It's great to see women playing sports, and now it's time for women to be getting in the money game.
Yeah, I like that analogy. That's really helpful. And it's interesting, kind of a thing about getting in the game. You know, I've talked to a lot of people that are maybe close to 100 years old, and you know, in their early 20s, and there is a difference kind of from the ages on down of how much more the younger women are getting in the game. But we're talking here about retirement, and a lot of the people who are facing retirement are 60 years old, and they're kind of on the cusp. Maybe it's a little bit of a changing dynamic for them. But what I find so interesting about a few topics, and I want to talk about one in particular, especially is Social Security, is because it's often the 92-year-old widow who's living on that Social Security decision that was made by her now deceased husband 30 years ago is when he made it. And yet she's the one that's listening or living off of that. So I really want to dive into Social Security, especially. So let's talk about that real quick. What should women be looking at when they're thinking about Social Security, making Social Security decisions, you know, either on their own or in a couple?
Yeah, I love your observation of that. And it's one of the things I talk about to a little bit younger people as they're thinking about, everybody knows 62, you can claim Social Security, right? So I try to talk them off that ledge. And I do talk about it in those longevity terms and say, look, you know, we're all faced with a decision that we make in our early 60s that will dog us into our 80s and 90s and those turning 100. By the way, big shout out to my mother-in-law who will be 100 next month. And
oh,
my
amazing.
Father-in-law who's 101 in May.
Wow.
So this longevity thing is a real, it's the real deal. So we're it's not a promise, you know, no guarantee, but many, many of us are going to live a really long time. And women who are married, which is by its, I believe the number is 92% of boomer women got married. Now, they didn't all stay married, and a lot of times they're widows now. But we have that construct as a baseline, right? That we were married most to a man, and we formed this economic household, right? So he did the money, she did the shopping. Right, that's kind of the traditional division of labor in the boomer generation. And that led to the men typically working outside the home, being the earners, earning the Social Security benefits. And so as a spouse, as a wife, your benefit hinges on what your husband did, not only in how much he earned over his career, because higher earners get a bigger benefit in dollars, but when he claimed locked you in to not only how much you get as a spouse, which is half of his, we call it a primary insurance amount, a little more technical. It's the amount he'd get at his full retirement age, or 66 to 67. It's a number. Usually it's in the $2,500 to $3,500 a month range. She gets half of that, but only if she waited till her full retirement age. Also 66 to 67. So what we end up seeing, though, with the early boomers, the leading edge boomers, so they're the ones born 1946 to about 1955, they almost without exception claimed early. 80% of men claimed before 66 and 85% of women. So they all locked themselves into the least amount they could get from Social Security. That might have seemed like a good idea at the time. But now if you're the woman who's 90 or 92 or however old today, you lost your husband, sadly, and it's a really tough time, right? You've been married for decades. Now you lose this anchor in your life and then find out you get one benefit and it's not yours because that's the smaller, it was only half of his. You get to step into his shoes, but he took the smallest amount possible. So where you could have gotten, say, in today's dollars, $3,000 a month, maybe you're only getting $2,500 a month or $2,300 a month. If you ask any woman, would you rather have $2,300 a month for shopping or $3,000 a month for shopping? What would every woman answer? Of course, they want the higher amount. But we don't know that for the most part when we are making these decisions. Certainly not the older boomers. So what we're trying to do as an industry, I know you do this with your clients, we try to bring this decision into knowledge, understanding, and why it's important to wait to claim or understand the consequences if you claim early. So our industry has really tried to help move that needle.
Yeah, it's helpful.
Lukewarm successful.
We're getting there, and I'm trying my best on that, getting this education out of there. And it seemed like this past week, a lot of questions came up to me around spousal Social Security. How does spousal Social Security work? And so I'm planning out a script for a video that I'll get out there of here's how spousal Social Security works. I haven't recorded it yet, so you can perhaps influence me on what I need to change or focus on. But so far, what I've got the thought on is if you're actually thinking of spousal Social Security, it's because your own retirement benefit is less than half, right? Half or less than what the bigger benefit is. And as you said, it's the lower benefit that goes away when the first person dies. So your lower benefit goes away when the first person dies. It won't be around as long. Meanwhile, you've got this other benefit that's at least twice as much as that spousal benefit. And they both can earn 8% by waiting. So which one's going to be more important, the lower one that goes away quicker or the bigger one that stays around longer? And so as much as I went through and I explained, here's how the spousal works and stop telling yourself I get half of what he's getting, get rid of the word get and instead use the word promise. You are promised half of what he's promised at that age, and there can definitely be pay cuts. So get rid of the word get when it comes to spousal. and instead use the word promise. But then it's nice to know how spousal works. And yet the most important benefit for the spouse that gets the spousal is not it's that benefit. It's the bigger benefit that can grow and can be there for the survivor. So it's almost like stop worrying about the spousal benefit. Worry about the survivor benefit and how can you get the most out of that. So that's my my construct so far. How's it sounding?
It sounds great. You are spot on. And just don't forget, I would suggest the ex-spouses. So same thing, if you had, there are a lot of rules for whether or not you can claim on your ex, but the key is you had to have been married 10 years or longer. So lots of women were married for 10, 15, 20 years to, you know, their ex-husband and have not remarried. So for them, the rules are the same. You know, they would get half, that they would be promised half of his as a lower earner, assuming she's the lower earner. So she'll get and be promised half of his, but also if he's the first to die, the ex-spouse can also step into his shoes and get a much larger monthly benefit, which is super important when you're old. You know, we don't want less when we're old.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we've got this bit of Social Security to start with, because I think it's probably the biggest one-time decision. And it is a one-time decision, basically, facing anyone, decision. And especially women, for all the reasons that we're talking about. But I want to talk about your book. It's called What's the Deal with Retirement Planning for Women? And I love the back part of your cover. It starts out saying, women are completely comfortable talking about many M-word topics, their marriages, motherhood, mothers, Merlots, martinis, mammograms, and menopause, but bring up money and the conversation screeched to a halt. So besides winning the award for best alliteration, it brings up a lot of things. And I'm going to talk about the health stuff. And it seems like women just more naturally focus on their own health, right? Maybe that's instinct somehow. But I'm curious, we're talking about, you said 92% of boomers got married, and typically the female married a male. Yep. Now, how can women who are already going to focus on their own health also encourage their husbands to improve their health? Because this longevity situation, I think the big problem is not when, you know, financially the big problem is not when there's two of you going along and getting two Social Security benefits. It's when the one, most likely the man, stops early because his heart stops ticking. So what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, love the topic. And I would say it is an ongoing battle for most wives to get their husbands to the doctor. I mean, this preventive care is so important to catch something early. And guys, I don't know what it is. This is why I have to talk about women, because I'm not a guy.
There you go.
I truly don't understand why you would avoid going to a doctor. I guess you just don't want to know. But when you don't know and you can't intervene early, the odds of you making it through some of these really nasty diseases that we're going to have as we age, we get sick. We need to know and put some good steps in place. So all I can say for wives, you know, we try very hard. I happen to have a husband who is very scientific, so going to the doctor is not an issue for him. He might actually be a little better than me. But for men, this mindset that they want to protect their wives, and this is very much, again, an older boomer standard, and yet it's for a lot of men today, too. They have this, I'll call it inbred sort of position or thinking or belief or whatever you want to call it. They do try to protect their wives. There is a protection gene, I think. And if you want to protect your wife, the best thing you can do is stick around. So, you know, stay up with the new technologies and the medications. I call them, my other M words are the modern miracles of medicine. And, you know, sometimes we need a little shot here or there, but it's very important. And if you're not going to work on your health, make better money decisions. Because I'll tell you, Jeremy, the number one thing I hear from widows is how shocked they were to find out that they only get one Social Security check after he died. They're not prepared for that. And while it may be only in quotes here, only a third of their Social Security income that gets cut, some people will find it's half, they were not prepared for that. And it happens immediately.
Yep.
You know, there's no like, oh, I can get his check and mine through the end of the year. No. The rule with Social Security benefits is you have to be alive for a full month in order to get paid the next month. When you die today, March 8th, March is gone. Your surviving spouse will get your February check, and in April, you're down to one.
Yeah, and of course, if it accidentally goes out, they don't know yet. It's coming right back, right?
You got to repay it. You sure do. And that is not a welcome bill to get in the mail.
No, that's not fun at all. I love all your M alliteration. I just realized that I think you've got a natural knack for it when you're a Marsha McDonald Mantel.
So exactly.
Yeah, so that's great. But it's interesting too on the topic of these M words. You said when it comes to money, our lips are sealed. And so, what do you think is causing that, and how can we adjust that situation?
I have a wonderful colleague in the industry, Kathleen Burns Kingsbury, and she talks about breaking money silence. That even today, of all the things we talk, who would ever think we would have seen the kinds of ads on TV we see today for healthcare products, for various drugs, and all of this health stuff? And women do talk about menopause and mammograms and how important it is to, you know, keep up with our health. But man, we don't talk about money still. And I think it's that. Well, a number of things. One, we weren't socialized for it. We weren't educated about money. Anybody, not men and women. It's not something that's part of the curriculum for most of us, though for the youngest kids, maybe we're making some progress. But not the Gen Xers, not the boomers, not even the millennials. My kids are millennials, and they had no finance type courses in high school and so forth. So we don't talk about it in education. We generally don't talk about it at home. And I think amongst our peer groups, when we say we need to talk about money or break money silence, everybody thinks that means I can ask you how much you make. And that is the least thing that we want to talk about. We want to talk in concepts and, you know, our budgeting, for example, that's a big one. Do you stick to a budget? Like most people would tell you, well, I don't have a budget. Right there, we have a problem. You know, do you have a credit card spending? Just listening to the president's address last night, you know, credit cards charging such high fees if you don't pay your credit card on time. And he's, you know, working, he calls them junk fees, you know, trying to get rid of some of that. But what it illustrates is how ill-prepared we all are for the complexities of living today and buying things successfully. So we don't talk about any of that stuff. You know, we'd rather talk about, I don't know, the latest hot show or the coolest Netflix show or what's on sale, you know, at the latest online shopping or what we got on Etsy.
Well, and a big part of the money is that once you have that kind of figured out, you can do all those things. You know, maybe if the money part isn't your cup of tea, if that's, you know, if you're the non-financial spouse, well, then knowing enough and getting it right, kind of coming in on the times that are important, like the Social Security decision or finding out about just how the money is set up is important so that you can go do the things that you have more of a care for that are maybe the more fun parts of life. And I'm reading through your book, The Retirement Planning for a Women book. Boy, it's for such a small book that's filled with incredible wisdom. I had so many things in here to go through, but one of them, which I thought was great, is this idea of a freedom fund. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this freedom fund and how that could be a way to feel better about your money.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for reading through the book. The freedom fund actually is an invention from my husband, Dan. Dan and I got married very young, and it's always been our money for decades. But at one point, I was getting bonuses when I worked in big corporate America, and I came home one day and told Dan I was getting a bonus, and I wanted that money. And he said, of course, it's our money. What a silly thing to say. I said, no, I mean, I want it for just me. And we had a battle for months that went on. Neither of us had ever had individual accounts. I wanted to actually set up an individual registered account, just the Marsha McDonald Mantel. And he was not happy. There were things we needed to pay off. I wanted to save it, blah, blah, blah. One day he got up in the morning and he said, all right, here's what I think. I don't think we should have your money and my money, but this is important to you. So why don't you set up your Marsha Freedom Fund? And the reason we named it that, he named it that, it had a specific goal. I wasn't just hogging money because there was some money coming in the house. I wanted to be able to quit my job in corporate America. It was very, very stressful. We had two children. And if I quit my job, we'd have to sell the house. Mm. We weren't going to sell the house. That was not one of our personal goals. But I just couldn't walk off the job. So the plan was to bank my bonuses until I had enough to pay for 1 year that I could step out of corporate America, figure out what I was going to do, and move on. So money to me has always been, it always comes tagged with an expense, but with a thing I want to buy or a thing I want to do with it. It's not just, and Dan and I are very different. Money is fungible, he'll often tell me. I said, no, it isn't. It goes into a bucket because it has an identity. And that money, that Marsha Freedom Fund, was truly meant for me to quit my job. So the end of the story is I did quit my job. I was saved up for 6 or 7 years. I quit my job. And 1 month later, I started Mantell Retirement Consulting. And I had a contract in hand. So I never got my year off. We still have, we call it the MFF. We still have the MFF. It's been invested. It can be for, you know, one of our girls for their weddings or for something we want to do, a big extravagant family trip or something one day. But the power you feel when you have your own bucket of money, it can't be replaced by anything else. It's incredibly powerful and you own it.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think just that that concept there is worth the price of admission to get the book. And I think it's great because what you did, and I think a lot of people can emulate, male or female, is that you thought of something you want. You made a plan to get there. You took some control. And I think a part of when you're talking about retirement planning for women is taking on some more control. And I think just in general, you should focus on what you can control. Control what you can control and, I don't know, ignore, diversify the rest of it. And a lot of things you can't control are what's going on in the stock market, but you can control your Social Security decisions and you create your freedom fund. So there's a lot of control that you took on. And it all started with something that you wanted to make happen, which is great. Speaking of things you want, and you and I are both retirement planners, educators, when it comes to retirement, how do you spend your retirement? How do you envision, like, what do you want to do in your retirement?
It's an amazing question. And to help answer that question, I think you know, I've written 3 books. And the last one is called Cooking Up Your Retirement Plan. And that book is specifically, it's all worksheets, it's discussion guides. It's a framework to create your own recipe for what these amazing years are going to be after you leave the job. And one of the tasks I ask people to do is try to fill out 1 week. What will you fill out 1 week today? Like, you can just print off your calendar. You know, we're busy, right? We've got meetings and client meetings and things we have to do and deadlines, and we run around, you know, very busy in work life. Now, think ahead. What will the 10th week of retirement look like? So you've gotten over the vacation-y mode, right? And now it's 10 weeks in. You haven't seen any of your friends from work. You haven't had any pressure from your boss. Frankly, you've had nothing. What will that week look like? So I've tried this exercise. I don't just talk about it. I've actually tried it several times. I'm failing miserably at it, Jeremy. Because Dan and I, again, we cannot come up with an agreement of who's going to make dinner. I've been making dinner for 40 years now for Dan, well, and me and the kids. I don't want to do it anymore. And he doesn't want to do it. So we're scrappling over, what do you do between 5 and 7 p.m.? All right, but now go earlier in the day. Yep, I'll go to the gym. That's something that's on the list. I might learn to play the piano. That's been on my list for 40, 50, maybe even years. There are a couple tidbits, but there's still no real recipe. Like, I don't have all my ingredients yet, but I'm having such fun at work, mainly because I, you know, have my own business, that it's like, well, I would do the same things I'm doing today. I think it's so important to be talking to women, to be helping financial advisors with this retirement income side of the mountain. I don't have any plans to stop that at this time. So we're experimenting. And in fact, next week, we're trying our very first thing. We're calling it our retirement adventure. And we're going for a week. We picked a city. We live in New England. It's a little chilly here, like it is for you. We're going to go down to Virginia and check out a couple of the towns down there to see if that's somewhere we'd want to spend like a month when it's really cold up here and we could go somewhere else. So it's our very first attempt at trying to figure out, well, the world is big. What do we want to do? I don't know. Give it a try.
Well, I liked how you said you have the worksheets and you're making use of them. And it seems like you don't have all your ingredients left for, or ingredients put together for your retirement. No. That's a question I've been asking people lately is, how do you know you're ready to retire? I think the answer might be when I know I have all the ingredients to retire, right? When you've got that set, you might feel more comfortable to retire. And I love how you're checking out a town for a week to see if you want to maybe spend a month there and then maybe, you know, longer down the future. It's the idea of renting for a month and checking different places, at least for me personally, I think is a great way to go. I've seen a lot of people that say, you know, I love going to Florida every spring break, and so I'm going to go move down there. Well, you've only been down there when it's 80 degrees and your hometown is 20. Yeah, and you've only vacationed down there. You haven't actually, you know, lived down there, and to make a big jump into buying a place is quite a big financial leap that might not always work out. I've got to give a plug for your other book, Social Security for Women, and you can see how it's thicker than Retirement Planning for Women, just proving the complexity of Social Security, and just to show it, the reason it's so complex is because you go through, well, Social Security is so complex, but the reason why the book is thick is because you go through all the scenarios. You've got what if the female's older? What if they're younger? What if they make more? What if they make less? What if you were single your whole life? What if you're divorced? You're widowed? Everything. So I think that's a great book to check out, is the Social Security for Women book. And of course, we love reading, educating on the Retirement Reveal podcast. And so for all those listening that want to get this book, I'll have links to both books, all three books of Marcia's on the in the show notes in the description here. But the first three people that reach out to me and say it's a podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, podcast at kylefp.com, that you want one of Marcia's book, let me know which one: Social Security for Women, Retirement Planning for Women, or the Retirement Recipe book. Let me know, and we'll send that book out to you on our dime. So reach on out. We love to hear from you. Yeah, we love books. We love giving away books. We love educating.
Love it. Me too.
Well, I've got one more question for you, Marcia. Before we get to that, tell us, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Oh, I think the best way, you get some great information, plus you can reach me, is on my blog, which is called BoomerRetirementBriefs.com. All one long word, BoomerRetirementBriefs.com. So great articles on there that I've written, interviews with boomers, worksheets, anything on there is free, and you are welcome to use it. Medicare worksheets, Social Security checklists, you name it, it's out there.
Yeah, excellent. We'll have a link to that as well. And of course, if you'd like more ideas from me on how to avoid big retirement mistakes, go to my YouTube channel, the Mr. Retirement YouTube channel. We'll have a link there too. Marcia, I've got one final question. Tell us something about yourself that few people know about. And remember, this podcast is rated clean.
All right. I will share, I'm very excited about something coming up. So you may know, the first Saturday in May every year is the Kentucky Derby.
All right.
I've never even been on a horse. But I lived in Kentucky for 3 years when I was a little girl. This year, it's the 150th running of the Roses, which made me say to my husband the other night, oh my God, I marched in the Kentucky Derby parade when I was in eighth grade 50 years ago.
Ah.
For the 100th running of the Derby. So I cannot believe 50 years has gone by. So that's not something most people know about me.
Well, that's great. You see, if you get a free pass, can you get into the parade as an alumni?
Geez, I wish. Yeah, maybe I didn't ask soon enough.
There you go. That's fun. That's a good tidbit that you were part of the parade on the 100th. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Marcia. You've shared a vast amount of wisdom. There's more in there in all of your books, I know. So definitely check out Marcia's books.
Jeremy, thank you so much for inviting me back.
Yeah, it's been a blast. And thank you for listening to the Retirement Reveal podcast. We believe if you know more about your money, you'll feel better about your money and you will make better money decisions.
This was another great episode of the Retirement Revealed podcast. Click on the subscribe button below to automatically get our latest episodes. If you liked our show and want even more, please give us a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. Please go to retirement-revealed.com to learn more and send us your questions and feedback. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Kyle Financial Partners, Thrivent, or its affiliates. The guests are not affiliated with or endorsed by Thrivent Advisor Network. Kyle Financial Partners does not provide legal, accounting, or tax advice. Consult your attorney or tax professional. Representatives have general knowledge of the Social Security tenets. For details on your situation, contact the Social Security Administration. Kyle Financial Partners is part of the Thrivent Advisor Network, a registered investment advisor. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have with your investment planning. Advisory persons of Thrivent provide advisory services under a doing business as name or may have their own legal business entities. However, advisory services are engaged exclusively through Thrivent Advisor Network, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Kyle Financial Partners and Thrivent Advisor Network, LLC are not affiliated companies. Information in this message is for the intended recipients only. Please visit our website, www.kylefp.com, for important disclosures.